Greetings, I'm Sue, and this is the Lynn Daily item for April 10th, 2026. First article, Swampscott Select Board Member Issues a Policy by Aaron Hickey. Select Board Member Mary Ellen Fletcher issued a public apology on Wednesday evening after an independent investigation found she violated the town's code of conduct in connection with a formal complaint brought to the town by fellow board member David Grishman. The apology stems from an incident the evening before Thanksgiving when Fletcher said she and Select Board Chair Katie Phelan received an email accusing Grishman of striking a parked car in Vinon Square. I took it upon myself to walk into the police station to ensure that they received the email, Fletcher said. Even though I did forward the email to the police chief and the town administrator, I still violated the code of conduct by getting further involved. Fletcher acknowledged that her actions crossed a line outlined in the board's handbook, which defines how individual members interact with town staff and other officials. For this, I apologize to Mr. Grishman, the select board, and the town, and in the future I will do better, Fletcher said. The matter before the board, Phelan said, was not related to the original allegation involving the parked car, but rather focused on Fletcher's conduct and the complaint brought forward. An independent investigation was commissioned by the town with findings that will later be released publicly with some redactions. That investigation examined what occurred during Fletcher's visit to the police station and whether her actions aligned with the board's code of conduct. The findings were discussed by the select board last week in executive session and ultimately led to Fletcher's apology. The result of the investigation is obviously the apology that Mary Ellen just read, Phelan said. Appreciate that, Mary Ellen, for taking ownership for and responsibility to some of the facts and the allegations. In the conversation that followed, members of the select board stressed that the way board members interact with staff and each other is at the heart of the issue and something that they feel needs to be addressed moving forward. Board member Doug Thompson pointed specifically to language in the code of conduct that requires officials to route requests through the town administrator rather than directly engaging staff. The police department official felt as though they were being given direction, Thompson said, and clearly the only person we give direction to in all of town is the town administrator. Fletcher agreed, saying, no employee should feel that a select board member is telling them to do a job or telling them to do something. Another section of the select board code of conduct addresses how members raise concerns about one another, directing them to do so privately through leadership channels rather than in ways that could escalate publicly. Fletcher said she believed her apology covered both aspects of the policy that she was found to have violated in her conversations with police department officials and with other select board members. Board members largely welcomed the apology while also expressing frustration that the situation had reached that point. I want to thank Mary Ellen for actually owning this and admitting fault, board member Danielle Leonard said. None of us are perfect humans. I give you a lot of credit for doing that. At the same time, Leonard said she felt frustrated that the board needed to continue having these conversations. It's part of what I've been saying for a long time, that we can all disagree. We all have, very vehemently, she said. But we can absolutely have to chart a different course going forward. If we cannot hold ourselves accountable, then we have nothing here. Grishman, who brought forward the complaint that led to the investigation, said his goal was to ensure similar situations do not happen again, especially as he prepares to end his time on the select board at the end of April. I wanted to make sure that this does not happen to other select board members, the volunteers, other members of town staff, other residents, he said, describing the situation as a complete subversion of the chain of command and an abuse of power. The discussion grew tense, with Grishman criticizing what he described as a pattern of behavior that is completely and utterly unacceptable. Fletcher argued that some of the accusations Grishman made during the meeting were untruthful, saying to Grishman, "That's what you do all the time. You constantly make comments. You made slanderous comments toward Gino Cresta and Katie Phelan. This is what you do." The conversation did not go in depth to the substance of the investigation or what was said between Fletcher and the police official, though Grishman said the report contained quotes from Fletcher that were chilling to him and his family. Phelan brought the conversation back to an agreement that select board members must be able to hold themselves to the agreed upon standard. As a board, we signed a code of conduct and we agreed to hold ourselves to that standard. And that is what we did here, she said. We're going to hold each other accountable to it, and we're going to be transparent about it. and that is the commitment I make to the community at large, because that's what you hired us to do. Next article, Saugus students shine in academics and athletics. After a tense school committee meeting on March 26 due to budget concerns, Thursday evening's meeting focused on the positive, student achievements. These achievements included celebrating athletes and students who participated in the New England Association Schools and Colleges Student Showcase. Athletic Director Matt Serino recognized the wrestling team, including those from Peabody, as it is a co-op. Also recognized were track athletes who qualified for nationals, Soroya Matthews, Destiny Okoye, and Hannah Strout. Serino also recognized girls basketball, highlighting the career of senior Peyton DiBiasio, who broke the high school's all-time scoring record. Saugus Middle High School principal Dr. Carla Scuzzarella then stood to acknowledge the students from the NEASC's showcase. We had our accreditation visit last week. It happens every 10 years, and they do look at student work. They'd like to get an idea of what our students are focusing on, Scuzzarella said. After a suggestion was made by the visiting chair to have students present their work instead of just being piled up to look at, it led to the showcase of student projects. Scuzzarella explained that 42 students ranging from grade 6 to grade 12 participated in the showcase with a wide range of disciplines, including art, civics, STEM, AutoCAD, forensics, and world language. They really did an amazing job. Some of my teachers also popped in to see the work of students in other classes, and the visiting team was very impressed with them. It was a wonderful hour of display of middle school and high school work, she said. Projects included a serial killer cereal box project and Black Women of the American Revolution project and a digestive system project. Students who participated were then invited to speak about their projects. One student was Nicole Faraz Lentez, a seventh grader who completed a project titled Voices Who Cannot Be Silenced for her ELA honors class based on the book Code Talker. This project was created to explore the experiences of the Navajo children during school, war, and their victory, Faraz Lentez explained. The visual part of Faraz Lentez's project was a poster that acted as a timeline from the land to the sky. The poster showcased a Navajo boy standing in front of the sun, which Faraz Lentez explained was a symbol of guidance and hope. Under him is blue corn, which is a symbol of the Navajo homeland. Next to him, I included two Navajo figures. They are sitting together next to a campfire because that shows family and connection. On the other side, I added a bucket of soap because that was the punishment that Navajo kids got in the boarding school when they spoke their home language. She said that noting that it showed how identity and culture were taken from the Navajo. Faraz Lentez also depicted a Native American man on a horse wearing a Medal of Honor for his service in World War II. She talked about how she connected to the project as an immigrant who had to learn a new language and that she enjoyed the project. Other presenters included seventh graders Giovanna Sao Felix and Helosio de Lima, who presented an AutoCAD 3D design project. AutoCAD is used by architects, engineers, and designers to create technical drawings and models. It also included using a computer program to build pieces of, I believe, machinery, buildings, and things like that, Sal Felix said. What we do is insert the measurements into the computer program so shapes appear, and with the shapes, we use the pictures to mimic how they are supposed to look. De Lima talked about how the project included drawing, editing, organizing, and outputting. What I learned from this project was to accurately scale drawings and working faster with shortcuts, plus evolving my brain to learn different things, understanding how engineering and architecture works, and how to use different techniques, De Lima said. Scuzzarella pointed out that Sal Felix and De Lima were doing the same work in the class as high school juniors and seniors. After all the projects had been presented, the school committee commented on the dedication of the students who participated. Next article. Peabody students dip into the gene pool. Peabody Veterans Memorial High School students donned their safety goggles and lab coats Thursday morning before performing a gene editing exercise on E. coli as part of their elective biology class taught by Ryan Slater. The lab was to introduce new DNA into E. coli bacteria. In this specific lab, we used a plasmid, which is a small ring of DNA called PGLO, to get the bacteria to take in this new DNA, students had to carefully heat shock the samples by moving them rapidly from ice to a warm water bath and back again, Slater explained. This new DNA gives the bacteria a special ability. They will glow under UV light, but only when a specific sugar called arabinose is present in their environment. Thursday's step taken was plating, which Slater said refers to how the students precisely spread the bacteria onto different petri dishes, some containing the sugar in an antibiotic, all to test if the gene editing was a success. If they master this mechanism, their ultimate goal is to design their own bioindicator, bacteria, Slater said. He stated that since bio means life, an indicator means a signal or alarm, a bioindicator is essentially something that makes a living thing an alarm for something else. Instead of reacting to sugar, they will try to engineer bacteria that glow in the presence of a local community-based pollutant. The idea here is to practice a biological concept first in the lab and then apply the same practice to solve real-world environmental problems, Slater said. Slater's class is influenced by a transformative learning experience. TLEs are programs developed by Springpoint, a nonprofit organization that reimagines the high school experience by centering students. With the goal of keeping students engaged and interested with the curriculum by giving them the kind of learning experience that leads to rigorous thinking. This TLE, Honors Biotechnology Applications, was first implemented at PVMHS in partnership with the Barr Foundation in the second semester of the 2024-2025 school year. PVMHS juniors and seniors are able to sign up for this class as an elective. According to Slater, last year's class only had 8 students. Now there are 18, many of which emphasize that this program stands out from the typical high school experience. PVMHS senior Armando Tabit Hernandez, who plans to major in chemistry in college, said Honors Biotechnology Applications feels more like a college course than a high school class because the students will learn something one day and practice it immediately the next day. He said the class was very well structured and recommended that his fellow PVMHS students take it. PVMHS senior Brady Trachea said that's what makes this class special, is how collaborative it is. Especially if you want to go into something scientific or science-related, you need to have the ability to communicate and work with people. And this class really brings that out of people, and it teaches you how to do that because everything we do is collaborative, Trachea said. We're almost never working alone, and on top of that, Mr. Slater really gives us the answers to anything. We have to figure it out as a class together. So it kind of makes you really build your critical thinking skills and your teamwork communication skills. A handful of Slater students confidently share that this class has positively impacted their futures, guiding them to figure out which scientific niche they would like to study and what career opportunities pique their interest. PVMHS senior Denian Mimo helps to study biomedical engineering with a focus on UV machines, prosthetics, and new medical technology. This class kind of gives me a further grasp on how biomedical engineering would be, since I'm going to be working on some new cures and new technologies that could be able to help certain people that have certain disabilities, in this case, Mimo said. PVMHS senior Alana Rosa plans to major in biochemistry to later work in biotech after college. Personally, especially when we were learning about more of the medicinal uses for biotech and the pharmaceutical uses for biotech, and also even engineering with food, I think it made me realize that I did want to go into the biotech field and kind of reaffirmed what I wanted to do because I saw how interesting it was, Rosa said. PVMHS senior Matilda Aluwo noted how impactful it is to hear that this project entails learning how to detect pollutants, and more so how the class's final presentation is about using that knowledge to solve a problem in Peabody by proposing a way to find and study local pollutants. I feel like by doing that and kind of addressing the problem and helping us find out how we can solve it, I think that is what makes it really meaningful, Aluwo said. I feel like that's kind of why we're doing all of this, to kind of help our community and give back. The students' final presentation is open to the public and will be on May 21st in the PVMHS auditorium from 8:15 to 10:45 a.m. All community members are invited to attend. After hearing how his students praised and valued his class, Slater said, "This is exactly what makes teaching such a rewarding profession." As an educator, you hope to spark curiosity, but knowing that the activities and lessons you do in class are actually inspiring them to devote their lives to these scientific professions is truly priceless, he said. It is a humbling reminder of the impact that hands-on applicable science can have on students. Next article, Inside the Massachusetts Abortion Influx. Massachusetts has become an increasingly prominent destination for abortion care, with new state data showing a dramatic rise in patients traveling from across the country, many navigating legal barriers, financial strain, and medical urgency to access services. According to newly released figures from the State Department of Public Health, 49,450 abortions were performed in Massachusetts in 2024, more than doubling the total from the previous year. Of those, at least 27,863 involved patients from out of state, reflecting a major shift in where and how people are accessing reproductive health care. The increase follows a series of policy changes in Massachusetts, including a 2023 SHIELD law signed by Governor Maura Healey that protects both patients and providers from out-of-state legal action. The law was built on earlier protections enacted after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, eliminating federal abortion rights and allowing states to impose restrictions or bans. Advocates say the data highlights Massachusetts' growing role in the national landscape of abortion access, while critics argue it reflects a system lacking safeguards. On the ground, providers describe a more complicated reality, one shaped by travel, delays, and increasingly urgent care decisions. Dr. Preetha Nandi, an OBGYN and abortion provider at Tufts Medicine, agreed that the trend aligns with what she and colleagues have seen in recent years. Certainly, she said, we know that more patients are traveling to receive safe abortion care. Nandi pointed to national data showing a shift from about 1 in 10 patients traveling out of state for care to closer to 1 in 5. Much of that, she said, stems from restrictions that prevent patients from accessing services closer to home. There's a lot more burden on patients when they have to travel away from home in order to access basic health care, she said. That burden can include taking time off work, securing child care, arranging transportation, and paying out of pocket for services that many may no longer be covered by insurance once they cross state lines. For some, those logistical hurdles lead to delays in care. While abortion care is, in general, very safe, we know that delaying care, particularly later and later into the pregnancy, can incur increased risk, Nandi stated. In her practice, she has treated patients who traveled from states with strict bans, even in cases involving serious pregnancy complications. I've treated multiple patients who have broken their water earlier in pregnancy than would be safe, she shared. In some states, she explained, there are no exceptions for abortion care in such cases, forcing patients to travel long distances while facing risks like infection or bleeding. For those patients, even the journey can be fraught with uncertainty. Can they take a flight? What if their flights need to land in an emergency land? What states are on their route, Nandi said. These sheer fear and real risk, it really tears away at the dignity of receiving basic health care. Despite the growing number of out-of-state patients, Nandi said, Massachusetts' relatively robust provider network has so far prevented major disruptions for in-state residents. I don't think out-of-state patients are really impeding on the access for in-state, she stated, noting that the state benefits from a very stable and growing workforce. Still, she emphasized that the broader national landscape is affecting the healthcare system in other ways. Providers are increasingly leaving states with restrictive laws, contributing to shortages not only in abortion care, but in general reproductive health services. There's deserts of care for general reproductive health care, she noted, as clinicians relocate to places where they can practice without legal uncertainty. A significant portion of abortion care is also shifting toward telehealth. State data shows that roughly 31,000 procedures in Massachusetts were conducted via telehealth, with providers prescribing medication abortion to patients in other states. These typically involve two medications, mifepristone and misoprostol, and are most commonly used in early pregnancy. While telehealth has expanded, it has not eliminated the need for travel. Some patients still cross state lines to obtain medication due to legal risks or lack of availability in their home states. At the clinic level, providers say they are seeing the impact of these trends firsthand. Danica, a Lynn-based nurse who works at an abortion clinic in Attleboro and previously worked in Florida, says she has noticed a slightly higher number of out-of-state patients in Massachusetts, particularly from nearby states like Rhode Island and Connecticut. With there only being one Planned Parenthood in Rhode Island, the next best option would be to come to Mass, she said. Her experience in Florida during the early wave of post-2020 restrictions was even more pronounced. There was probably, I wouldn't even be able to name how many that we saw increase, she said, recalling an influx of patients from Texas and other states after the new bans took effect. That surge had immediate impacts on clinic operations. It definitely affected a lot of wait times, she stated. It was a lot of add-ons, a lot of people coming in at the last minute. In some cases, clinics extended hours late into the night to accommodate patients who had traveled long distances and faced tight timelines. If they had a flight the next day, it was just not okay to turn them away, she said. Staff also spent significant time counseling patients on post-procedure care, especially those traveling shortly after treatment. It was a lot of giving them precautions of what is normal and what isn't normal, she said. Despite logistical challenges, both providers emphasized that patient care remains centered on individual circumstances and decision-making. These are extremely personal decisions for my patients and their families, Nandi said. Every patient situation is different and unique. She added that state and national policies often fail to account for that complexity. It's such a shame when I have to have a conversation with a patient about why they can't get care closer to home because of someone else making these wide-sweeping changes, she said. Danica echoed that sentiment, noting that patients often arrive in vulnerable and emotional states, sometimes sharing deeply personal experiences. There's so many different reasons that someone could want to make this choice, she said. The reasons that they have are valid. Both providers said the public conversation often focuses on numbers and politics, but they hope people understand the human realities behind the data. People deserve the right to safe care, Nandi said. These decisions deserve to be at the hands of patients, not anyone else. As more states continue to restrict abortion access, providers expect Massachusetts to remain a destination for care. While the system has so far absorbed the increased demand, it's clear that the long-term implications on patients, providers, and the broader healthcare system are still unfolding. Next article, filmmaker sprinkles the truth on misinformation. Filmmaker Andrew Korsenick is using a short film and guided discussion to help audiences better understand how misinformation, alternative media, and conspiracy theories can contribute to extremism. Korsenick, director and co-founder of Artist Web Productions, created Sprinkles Decoded, a 90-minute educational program designed to encourage critical thinking about today's media landscape. The program combines a screening of his short film, Sprinkles, with an interactive conversation about the forces that shape public perception and belief. The initiative comes at a time when trust in traditional media has declined and more people, particularly younger audiences, are turning to online platforms for news and information. Korsenick, a former Marblehead resident who now resides in Chicago, said the project grew out of his background in documentary-style theater, where storytelling is anchored in real-life events and interviews. Art can be an educational tool and can deal with difficult subject matter in a way that's accessible, he said. Originally, Korsenick intended the film as a reflection on what he believed was the end of the so-called post-fact era. However, as production stretched on, he said it became clear that misinformation and conspiracy-driven narratives were not fading but intensifying. It felt like a call to action, he said. The program begins with a 25-minute screening of the film, followed by a moderated discussion that explores how alternative media operates and how individuals can evaluate the information they consume. The name, Sprinkles, is intentionally cheeky. While it is set in a donut shop, it is a film noir-inspired thriller that was shot in black and white. Korsenick defines alternative media as content that exists outside mainstream perspectives, noting that while it is not inherently harmful, it can become problematic when it spreads unchecked or misleading information. He emphasized that the program is intentionally apolitical, focusing instead on the broader media ecosystem and the ways individuals can be influenced regardless of their beliefs. We're all vulnerable, Korsenick said, even people who think they're on a fact-finding journey. A key part of the discussion centers on the difference between journalism and opinion-based content. Korsenick said journalism, at its best, is grounded in fact-finding and objectivity, while much of today's online content blends opinion with reporting. He combined consuming opinion-driven media. He compared consumer opinion-driven media to eating junk food. It's fine in moderation, but it shouldn't be your primary source, he said. While the program is open to a wide range of audiences, including schools and community groups, Korsnick said he is particularly interested in reaching younger people who rely heavily on digital platforms such as streaming services and podcasts for information. He said these audiences may be especially susceptible to misinformation if they lack the tools to critically evaluate resources. The film's narrative follows a character who becomes immersed in conspiracy theories, ultimately losing touch with reality, a trajectory Korsnick said reflects real-world patterns. Our goal is to prevent the next person from going down that path, he said. Korsnick said the use of film is central to the program's effectiveness as it provides a shared experience that encourages discussion. Everyone watches movies, he said. It makes people more willing to engage. Organizers hope to expand Sprinkles Decoded to more communities and eventually develop the project into a full-length feature film. As misinformation continues to shape public discourse, Korsnick said the goal is to equip audiences with the tools needed to navigate an increasingly complex media environment. For more information about the program, visit sprinklesdecoded.com. Next article. Former Lynn superintendent headlined NSCC keynote speakers. North Shore Community College will celebrate its upcoming 2026 commencement ceremony on May 22nd at their Lynn Campus Green on Broad Street. This year, there will be two ceremonies featuring commencement speakers who have served monumental roles across both health and education. The first event will be held at 10 a.m. for the Liberal Studies in STEM and Business graduates, which also includes Frederick Douglass Collegiate Academy graduates from NSCC programs. The keynote speaker will be Dr. Patrick Tutwiler, President and CEO of Walker Therapeutic and Educational Programs, and former Massachusetts Secretary of Education. At 2 p.m., there will be a ceremony for the Health Professions and Human Services and Emergency Response graduates. Tom Sands, Market President in North Shore and NHC Board of Trustees, will be the keynote speaker. He served as president of Kearney Hospital in Dorchester, Mass., prior to joining Beth Israel Lahey Health. Last year, City Councilor at Large Nicole McLean held the distinctive honor. That's all the time we have for today, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to the Daily Item on the Talking Information Center.